there are always some areas in which each of us can, you know, learn and improve. I am absolutely not here as the perfect husband by any means or the perfect father, and you are not the perfect parents and the perfect husbands and the perfect wives. If you think you are, you might want to check with your spouse and just, you know, get some information there. But there's areas we can improve, and especially the point mentioned in the prayer there, not looking at what the other person is supposed to change, but what we can do better. Because I tell you what, you get a church or a family or a business, and everybody's focused on what everybody else is doing wrong and not improving themselves, nothing gets improved. All right, so let's get started here. All right, so this morning we're going to be talking about husbands and fathers, and our theme is going to kind of be building better homes. And I want to begin with this question, and especially tomorrow we're going to be talking about children, but I want to go ahead and introduce the idea a bit here. What kind of homes do our children need? So we got some young ladies here on the front, and for those of you who are not married, I want you to imagine that your husband-to-be is, you know, going to pick you up and go look at a house, because y'all are going to get married and you're going to have a place to live. And he said, hey, something just came on the market. And so he takes you to look at it, and you pull up, and they said, you know, needs a little TLC, and there it is. How many young ladies would say, oh, yes, that would do. that looks very suitable to bring my children up in. I think most of us would say, no, that will not do. There's no way that I'm bringing children into the world in that house. My children need a better home than that. So the realtor says, well, something else just came up on the market. It's on the old historic side of town, but it's got some nice lines. And you pull up and you see that. You think, well, yeah. Yeah, it's an older home, but if it's fixed up inside, you know, that's got some nice lines. That could be a wonderful home for my children. I imagine some of you recognize the first home. It's the birthplace of Abraham Lincoln. It may be the cabin next door, but they think it's his, or one right there would have been one like it. Guess whose home the top one is? John Wilkes Booth. My point is, it's not the house children grow up in. It's the home that children grow up in that's going to be important. And the crying need in our culture is not better houses. It's better homes. Houses are fantastic. I mean, I grew up, I remember, in a one-bathroom house, five people in it, you know, and we managed, but it's nice when you got two, three, four bathrooms and stuff. I said bedroom, I meant to say bathroom. Some of us, you know, grew up in this type of house or other. There's a lot of nice houses now, but what are homes like in our culture? Up around Washington, D.C., there's all these kind of big, kind of McMansions, and it's like nobody's home. And nobody's watching the kid. I remember catching a kid shoplifting one time. And I don't remember why, but I was driving him over to his house or something one day. And, you know, big, nice house, but you can tell, terrible relations, you know, with his parents were divorced and his stepfather hates him and all this stuff. We don't need for our children better houses. We need better homes. So whether this is your home, or this is your home, or this is your home. The thing is, what's going to happen to all three of those? Seeing that these things are all thus to be destroyed. At some point, they're not going to be here. But what is going to be here? The souls of children brought up in those homes is going to be important. So Proverbs chapter 15, verse 16 and 17. A couple of verses to put things in perspective. This one says, better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and trouble with it. Better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a fattened ox and hatred with it. Very similar, Proverbs chapter 17, verse 1. Better a dry morsel with quiet than a house full of feasting with strife. So we're going to be focusing this morning on the husband, father part of the home. But we want to look at some basic things about the home. And like I told a young man earlier this week, 19 years old, and I was talking to him, I said, you're already working on your family. You know, if you plan to get married and have children, your family, in a sense, has already started, because part of the family is what? The dad, the husband. You're building the man that your family needs to depend on. And like in construction, if you got a bad foundation, you know, there's problems before you start putting up any walls. So for a young man and for a young woman, be preparing yourself now for what you need to be in that home. And Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, you know this verse. For this cause shall a man leave his father and his mother and cleave to his wife, and the two shall be one. Have you noticed how our culture is attacking almost every aspect of that? Now, it's promoted, and it's promoted somewhat in our educational system and promoted constantly in the media and in Hollywood and everything. It doesn't have to be a man and a woman. It can be a man and a man. It can be a woman and a woman. And we've got professors now. There was a professor a while back said, we've got to get rid of the idea that children belong to their parents. And the idea of staying together or even bothering to marry and the idea of saving the physical relationship for marriage is just totally absent, you know, for most people. Hebrews 13:4 says, let marriage be had in honor among all, and let the bed be undefiled. For fornicators and adulterers God will judge. Fornication is a broader term of sexual immorality. Adultery is a specific kind of fornication. It's where there is sexual immorality in violation of somebody's marriage covenant. Both of these will be judged, it says. Continuing, the home should be built on following what God said. Now, Jesus is talking about us individually in Matthew chapter 7, but since we're talking about the home, we'll use his language there, the house, to illustrate this concept. Jesus said, he that listens to me, hears my word, and does it, is like a what? A wise man that what? Built his house on the rock. Are there going to be floods? He didn't say there won't be floods. There'll be floods, there'll be winds, there'll be storms, but what's that house going to do? Stand, because it's built on rock. The foolish man that hears my words, doesn't do what I say, he's building on sand. And what's the direction, the focus of the family? Joshua 24:15. What does Joshua say? If you don't want to serve God, you can pick out which pagan deity you want to worship, but, you know this verse, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Homes, like houses, need work and maintenance. And marriage is work. It's a blessing, but it is work. And if you don't do the work, it's like if you don't work on your car and you don't work on your house, that has an effect. When you do the work, that has an effect. So here's a question for dads. I want you to think about the relative importance of temporary threats and eternal threats, okay? So this afternoon, dads, you go home to your house and you find that. Does that immediately call your attention and you want to see what's happened and you're going to take care of that? Any dads here going to ignore that? Say, oh, well, that's too bad. Don't worry about how it happened. Don't worry about fixing it. It's November. It's going to be getting cold. Nobody in here is going to ignore that, right? How about You go down in the basement and you look up and you see termites. Is anybody gonna hear say, it's probably just a phase. It'll probably pass. I'm not gonna worry about it too much. I think every dad here would react to both of these immediately, am I right? And appropriately so. Why? Our house is at threat. And especially the one on the right, but the one on the left kind of too. We could lose some serious equity there, right? This is something valuable that's being damaged, and whose job is it to make sure that that's stopped right now? On a spiritual and moral level, are we letting toxic filth infiltrate our home? If you were the devil and you wanted to separate people from God and you wanted to destroy people's souls, capture people's children, weaken churches by bringing the world into the church so that it ends up being dead and worthless, how much would you value a cable or a signal going to every home in America where you could just pump all sorts of filth and corruption and wrongness into that home? Is that coming into your home? I work with young men every summer. Sewell Hall started a kind of a training camp that he did for years with young men, and I had the blessing to be able to work in that a few years. And then when it got too big for the campsite that they were using, Gary Fisher and Joe Works expanded versions of it into Indiana and up in the Northeast, and I worked with those. And these are good young men that will take off a week of their summer and just sit through Bible class after Bible class after Bible class, and then lunch and then more Bible classes and singings and assemblies and stuff. And they just go. Most of them, many of them, and I won't exactly say how many, but a lot of them. Some of them haven't gotten into it. Some of them have gotten into it and out of it. But a great many of them are trapped in a cycle of pornography addiction. And it's like one young man said to me, he said, you know, I wish my father gave me this smartphone, you know, like when he was 13 or 14. He said, I wish he had never given it to me. Now let's go back to the termite question. How seriously would you take it if termites were eating through the lumber in your house? Which is more serious? The pornography industry is huge, and it's destroying people. And some of these young men, I remember one said, he's talking to some other young men, and he said, we're always going to have this problem until we get married. I remember a friend of mine, he's dead now. First time I had to start dealing with his problems was when he came into my office crying, and tears flowing, because his wife, this was back when there were those, everybody didn't have laptops and smartphones as much at the time, but there was those 1-900 numbers where you could call and talk to basically a phone prostitute. And it showed up on the phone bill, of course, and his wife caught him. And so he came in and he was wailing and crying and everything, as he should have been. But then a while later, I get another call. He's in another city, and now something else terribly perverse has happened. And then later he's in another state and I get another call and he's about to leave his family. And by, at that point in his life, his 16-year-old son's job, you know, you have, everybody has their jobs in the house. His 16-year-old son's job was to try to keep dad off the internet porn. That was his role in the family. And he'd been talking with some woman, he's about to move to California and leave his family. And I called him and I explained to him that his life was not as far down the sewer yet as it was about to get. And he said, I have to see what's going to happen. And off he went to California. Not long after that, he was admitted to a psych ward. And then he's begging his wife to come get him and take him back, but he'd left her with no money. And then eventually, I'm glad to say, he straightened his life out. Before he died, he came back. And he came back to his wife and came back to the Lord. And right before he died, he told a young man, do not waste your life on pornography like I did. It started when he was a teenager, and it just continued and destroyed his life. Dads, fathers, make sure this is not going on in your life. And do not be naive and think, well, boys will be boys. Josiah was only 16 years old when, as the king of Israel, he set his heart to serve God. A 16-year-old doesn't have to be wicked and rebellious and given to the world. Timothy, who Paul calls a youth in the 60s, was somebody that he picked up to go with him in the late 40s. I suspect he may have been a teenager at the time. Don't make the mistake of expecting too little of your sons. And don't make the mistake of setting the wrong examples yourselves. So many homes are being destroyed. It's not termites. It's corruption. Whose job is it to make sure that's not going on in the home? Let's continue. Godliness does not come from taking our cues from the world. Romans chapter 12, please turn with me there. It is easy to do things the way mom and dad did it, to do things the way my cousin does it, to do the things the way my neighbors do it, to do the things the way my coworkers do it. If you do things the way people in the world do things, then expect the same results. Romans 12, I appeal to you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world. Be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. Husbands, leave and cleave. And one problem right now is young men that don't want to be young men. Some years ago, there was a young lady, a Christian, and she was still single at the time, but a number of her friends had gotten married. Girls, you know, in church, married guys in church, and she said this, not one of them is happy. Her married girlfriends, not one of them was happy. One of the reasons why was because these young ladies married guys and they thought that they were marrying a man, and then they found out they're marrying a boy. We're failing in this country to train boys to be men. And a lot of, let me tell one other horror story. So there's this couple, and the wife left her husband. You'll understand why. Not that she should have done it, but you'll understand why she wanted to do it. So he had no initiative. He was taking hardly any responsibility. He did have a job, but it was a very minimal job that didn't expect much of him, and he wasn't particularly trying to apply himself or accomplish anything else. So he would go to work and he would come home. He's not providing them a home. They're living in mom's basement. And I think they had kids. And so he's not paying attention to his kids or to his wife or to his, it's just, he got home and then he would start playing his games. And he would play his computer games till like 3 a.m. And then he'd get some sleep and then go to work the next day. You know what he was playing? I don't remember the name of it right now, but it was one of those, you know, military games where you go in and you got to shoot all the bad guys and stuff. And he would do that for hours and hours and hours and hours. Why do you think he was doing that? Exactly. It made him feel like a man. He's living in his mom's basement, playing computer games all night, not taking care of his wife or children, pretending he's a man. Can you understand why she left him? Not justify. Can you understand why she wanted to leave him? Leave and cleave. That's your family now. Take care of it. And provide for physical needs. In the garden, where were the curses? The curses show kind of realms of responsibility. Not that there's any overlap. I had a friend one night tell me after 4 kids, he said, I've never changed a diaper. Man, that's not something to brag about. You know, help out. Don't put everything in one category on mom, and it's not wrong for mom to help be able to, you know, bring finances in the home. The woman in Proverbs 31 did, but she was still a worker at home. She was dedicated in her home. But look at the curses. What are the curses on the woman? Domestic. It related to childbirth and her husband. What were the curses on the man? By the sweat of his brow, you know, fighting the thorns and the thistles. And different jobs have different thorns and thistles. Take that responsibility, provide that. But provide for physical needs. Deuteronomy chapter 6, provide for the spiritual needs. Let's turn there and read. This is right after the greatest commandment. You remember when Jesus was asked, what's the greatest commandment? Deuteronomy chapter 6. Verse 4, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. These words that I command you, you shall put on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children. Talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lay down, when you rise. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. Fathers are told what? Turn over there with me, please. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. We're going to be in Ephesians 5 in a minute, but this is after that. And it says, Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. Bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And they are to provide leadership in the house, but it is sacrificial and serving leadership. Look with me here on the screen. Husbands, love your wives how? As Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. This is the passage also that we'll be looking at in our second lesson, wives submit to your husbands. But let's notice here while we're talking about husbands, what's it the husband's job to do? Love your wife the way Christ loved the church. And how did he love the church? He gave himself up for her. Is Jesus the leader? Yes. Is the church to be in submission? Yes. But do you see the sacrificial leadership he exemplifies here? Leadership is not, I'm the head of the house, I'm the man, so I'm going to decide the way everything's going to be. We're going to eat at this time, and I'm going to have my apple pie, and we're going to watch the football game, and this is where we're going on vacation. That's not looking, that's everything about me, 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 me. Jesus sacrificed himself for the church. we're not put in charge so that we get to be a selfish dictator and get everything our way. We're put in charge like Jesus was in charge, who as a minister, I came not to be ministered unto, but to minister. Let's read that verse one more time. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. In the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it. So I got a bad toe. Hallux limitus, if you're familiar with it, it used to be a lot of bone had built up on top, and it was like welding a hinge. It wouldn't go up. And so they said, surgery could be done, but they said the tendon will never be the same. So I got the surgery done, and the tendon's not the same. Other guys have done it and didn't do it, and it just turns into like a almost golf ball sized piece of, bone, and your toe won't go. Well, I have to tend to that tendon because it's shortened. So out of my truck, I grab my strap. Before we do any hiking this afternoon, I'm going to stretch that toe. So I play basketball, I play sports and different things. But if I run from here to there without doing that first, my foot will start swelling up. So you know what I do with that? I stretch it, get that tendon nice and stretched out, and then I can do whatever I need to do. Why do I do that? That's my toe. Would I like it if this toe was like that toe? Yeah. But this toe needs some help. And because it's my toe, I nourish and I cherish that toe. I don't go, stupid toe, and cut off my leg. That's my leg. That's my toe. Sometimes I have treated my toe better than my wife, to my shame. Because have I ever gotten impatient with my wife when I shouldn't have? Frustrated with my wife when I shouldn't have? Husbands, love your wife as your own body, because what? The two shall be one. So that's my wife. In this passage, Jesus is the head, the church is the body, right? It's tend to, care for the wife. That's our job, husbands. I'm going to speed up here. I'm going to go maybe 3 or 4 minutes over because I'm way behind. But I'll start moving more quickly through this. Therefore, quoting from Genesis, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife. The two shall become one flesh. However, let each one of you love his wife as himself. See that the wife respects her husband. Just think for a minute about love and respect. This will not be true of everybody, but this is something general. And so I'll throw it out there. Here's two buttons, love and respect. You're allowed to push one button in this hypothetical scenario. If you push love, everybody important in your life loves you, but nobody respects you. If you push respect, everybody in your life important to you respects you, but nobody loves you. I want you to think about, because this won't be for everybody, there are some differences, but men will usually push one button, women will usually push the other. So think about what you would push. If you push the love button, your spouse, your kids, your parents, your siblings, your boss, your neighbors, everybody loves you, nobody respects you. You push the respect button, spouse, kids, family, neighbors, boss, employees, they respect you, but nobody loves you. If you had to pick, which one would you pick? A lot of men push the respect button. They want to be loved, but to not have anybody respect you, if my wife respects me in time, maybe she'll start loving me again. But if she doesn't even respect me, you know which button most women would pick? Usually they pick the love button. They want to be respected, but mom's not going to love me. My kids aren't going to love me. My husband's not going to love me. That's unbearable. With that thought in mind, notice the emphasis of this passage. What did it tell the husband to do? Love her. Give her that love that she so importantly needs. And what does it tell the wife to do? Submit to him. Be in subjection. Follow him. Show him that respect. Now, the other ends of it are there too in other passages. In Titus, older women are taught to train the younger women to love their husbands. And in Peter, husbands are told to give honor to their wives. So women should be respected, honored, and loved, and men should be respected, honored, and loved. But there's something at the core there in this passage. Husbands, love and sacrifice for your wife. Will that be meaningful to her? Yes. Wives, you submit to him. Show that respect and submit to him. And it fills two fundamental needs. Husbands, remembering your vows, love and cherish. Did we say that? You remember, you know, that somebody asked us those questions. Do you take this woman to love and cherish? We said, I do. But do we always? Do we love and cherish them when we're in a good mood and things are going our way? Do we love them and cherish them when they're going through a rough time? Do we love them and cherish them when they're getting on our nerves? Too many times I haven't. We didn't say, do you promise to sometimes love and cherish them? Sometimes be. No, this is what we're supposed to do. Honor. To keep yourself to her and her alone. And not only does that mean not adultery, but what does Job say? I made a covenant with my eyes not to look on a maiden. And coming back to the pornography that we were talking about before, you made a promise. Proverbs chapter 5, we don't have time to read that. We'll read that later. Matthew chapter 5, I do want to get that text read. This is where Jesus says, you've heard that it was said, do not commit adultery. I'm telling you, every one of you who looks on a woman to lust after her has committed adultery already in your heart. We're going to read these passages later, probably tomorrow morning. I want to, you know what, I'm going to stop here and we'll finish a little bit of this and then we'll get to the wives in the second section. Thank you very much.